This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
In the naked city, yeah, when you're all alone and all your hard-earned money's gone. You go walking down Broadway, watching people catch the subway. Take it from me, don't ask for a helping hand, 'cause no one will understand.
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
And good morning, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show, as the little lead-in said. Again, no peace in the naked city. Anyway, I'm going to, for the first half hour, I'm going to talk a little bit about a matter that's rather somber or will leave you gasping for understanding as to what is going on. And I, up front, I want to apologize, and I know it's going to trigger a lot of questions as to why and when and what and why are you doing this, and hopefully you'll understand, and if not, later on things shake out and you'll understand. But I, in this process of looking at this illegal dumping and the hauling of the materials up in the Waianae, the sludge from Hawaii Kai. Someone called me and shared that, well, I know you don't do these types of things and research and investigations. And I said, what is it? Well, I'd like to share with you some information that there was a hit and run that occurred in Waianae, or in along the coast over there, in Nanakuli, more specific. And I began to listen, and what I'm told now, peripherally, and these are information that I got, and I followed up on it and got a bit more information that go along with this, it seems to be plausible. So, on 1/14/2006, a lady by the name of Ramika Roy, and she was 63 years old, apparently around 4 o'clock-ish in the early morning, she was a pedestrian walking along at Maloa and Farrington in that area. And for some of you that know the area, there's Kentucky Fried Chicken, there's the Aloha gas station, and it used to be a Texaco. So if you, as I talk, if you hear, know anything or recall seeing anything, I am going to ask you to share with me. Call me at 782-6627 off the air. And if there's something you want to, if you think you've seen something. But now this thing is 6 years old. But the information that I received, and I'm still scratching and digging, was to find out. I was told that this party knows who was driving the car that hit the lady and left her to die. And they know where the car is, roughly. So if you're out there and you are the party that was driving this car in this hit and run on the morning of the 14th, around shortly before 5 o'clock, then I would suggest, the way I feel, I think based on the information that I'm receiving and the willingness of people to talk, I believe that you should go and turn yourself in. If you know what I mean. I can hear the hounds, believe it or not. But anyway, this information, if you have seen anything or recall seeing anything in that area, and please don't hesitate to call. And I've gone and interviewed some of the neighbors, and this lady, Miss Ramika, was a employee at one of the hotels, and as we all do, get up in the morning and walk. And we have a number of hitting runs that occur here on this island and in this state. But apparently, I don't know what it is that many of them go uninvestigated, unresolved. But I believe, based on the information we have now, that this person that did the hit and run will be brought to justice, or you should bring yourself to justice, because I haven't contacted the police yet, and many of you are wondering, because if I contact this person and contact the police, then it could always be argued that I'm serving as an agent for the government. Then I would be violating that person's rights if I was working for the government and taking instruction for them to try and doing my investigation or review and research. So to avoid that, when I get sufficient information, and it's an open case, so quite naturally, the police apparently had, you know, and I don't know what it would be called, negligent homicide, or, but anyway, the party should have stopped. And imagine every day that you drive through that area and you have run over someone and left them to die. Imagine driving through that area and looking. How do you feel? And so if anyone out there that knows this person, and we think we, as the information suggests, we think we know who this party is, where they live, and it would probably be the healthiest thing for you to do is go turn yourself in. And anybody that assisted you in concealing this, let's... Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yo, what's up, Carol Cox?
I'm okay. What's up with you?
Oh, nothing. Just calling to talk to you because, you know, well, if I call you after the show, I don't get to talk to you off air. That's why.
Well, I understand that, but, you know, if you're going to call up something relevant or pertinent. I mean, I go on air, and you're the first one to call, and I haven't said good morning. It may be Mickey Mouse sitting in that day. So,
Mickey Mouse?
Yeah, so, you know, use a little judgment on your calls.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the whole incident thing, yeah?
Right. So what do you have, anything you want to share? I'm not saying don't call. I mean, I would never...
Yeah, I know. I like calling in. I like sharing my thoughts on whatever you talk about, you know?
You know, I was going to ask you if I had the opportunity, and tell us a little bit about yourself, Jacob. I mean, you call and you're part of the radio family now. Tell us something about yourself. Who are you and what you do and what motivate you?
Let's see. I'm not from Milani. Mm-hmm. I'm in high school.
Okay. What grade are you? Now, don't give me any personal information.
No.
Just want to know, who is this voice, this man that calls up every day? Now, we love it. I mean, you know, I'm never going to be rude to you and say don't call. So.
Yeah, I know.
But tell us something about yourself real quick, and then I'm going to get back on track.
Well, I'm a sports fan.
Okay.
I love sports. I know this is not a sports show, though, but... Mm-hmm. I wish I could talk sports with you, but, you know, there's a lot of NFL games on today. You know, there's the Washington Redskins, Green Bay Packers, there's a whole lot of NFL games on TV, and, like, there was a lot of college games on.
So you say you're in high school, and what? How? You say you're in high school. What grade are you?
What grade am I?
Yeah, if you're in high school.
I'm not trying to give too much personal information.
I understand, but what grade are you? I mean, you say you're in high school.
Can I say what grade I'm in?
Pardon me?
Can I say what grade I'm in?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you'd like to.
I'm a senior in high school. I'm in the 12th grade.
All right. I remember I was in the 12th grade about 1,000 years ago.
Wow. Did you graduate from Milwaukee High School?
No. I'm from Mississippi, so.
Oh, you're from Mississippi, but you live in Milwaukee.
Right.
Oh, wow. You know our Milwaukee Trojans. We had a bye week this week.
Okay.
But, hey, did I tell you homecoming was next week?
Yeah, real quick, and I'm going to get
I meant homecoming was the following week. It's not... We play Campbell at home this Saturday, and then we play Lanahua for homecoming next week Friday. But guess what? There's no more away games for the rest of the season. Now we're home for the rest of the season because we've been on the road for like about 3 weeks now.
Oh, okay. All righty. Well, hey, I'm going to let you go, and thanks for the bit about you, okay?
Oh, okay. I'll talk to you next week.
You bet, bro. Thank you.
Let's go!
Okay. Anyway, this matter with the... If you've... again, back to the hit and run of Miss Ramika Roy. Her husband was a retired military, and he expired. His name was William Preston Roy. And they have two children, Cheryl and David. And if you... any of you know anything about this family or this incident, please call me or call the police, whatever you think is best. But I want to try and bring some closure. Imagine you going to work and you're ripped and torn away from your family in an instant. And the parties that run you over doesn't have the decency to pull over and render aid. And I just can't imagine knowing that someone would be living amongst us that has the capacity or the hard-heartedness to behave that way. And for goodness sake, I hope you don't have children or have anything to do with children, whether you're adopted or foster or whatever it is. I hope that you look at yourself in the mirror and know that you brought some real, real hard times and pain to this family. And so, again, this incident occurred right there at Ma'aloa and Farrington. There's the Kentucky Fried Chicken is one of the places of business there. It would be toward the Makaha side of that, and there's in the 1068 area. So, again, early morning, 4 o'clock-ish, between 4:30 and 5, apparently, the reports from the Star, the Honolulu Advertiser and Star Bulletin reports that it was early morning, about 4:53 a.m. And so if you've seen anything out there, again, my number is 782-6627. And I really appreciate everybody that I've canvassed the area and talked to many of the residents. And I want to say here on this show, thank you for being so open and caring and willing to provide information on this as you know it, and describe to me what happened, because it was something that I would never, ever want to experience at one of my loved ones or a friend or anything. It's just unthinkable. But again, if you've seen anything out there, please let me know or call the police. But and the persons, again, I don't mean to be intimidating or threatening to the parties that were involved, but I think we have enough information to raise that would at least warrant an interview, and a strong interview by the police. So that area is 87-1970 Farrington Highway, or right at actually she was found in the area. The residents say it in the 1968 spot, and that address, which is one building but sharing two addresses. So anyway, if you've seen anything, please call. We're going to start up a campaign and post some signs, and see if we can stimulate someone. And don't worry that it's 6 years. It's okay. It could be, if you got the information, I'm sure the police would be willing to and happy to receive it and follow up on it. So if you do, again, it's something that should be looked into. But and in closing, imagine you get up to go make a living and you work, and you've just recently lost your loved one, your husband, and you're still trying to make it in life, and someone run you down and leave you to die, which she, in this instance, she died. And in that area, just in that immediate area between Lu'ulu'ulei and Mohihi, there's been a number of pedestrians' death there. There's one gentleman with his son, 48-year-old man with his son, young son, who would kill. Another gentleman on a bicycle. And then this is a small area. So what I would say to many of you, drive safely and drive wisely and lay off the substance, lay off the liquid substance, lay off the whatever you snort and smoke, and, you know, when it comes to your fawn starts to kill people, then, you know, maybe we need stiffer penalties. I know that we are saying that drug use should be, and substance abuse, we should go in the family courts or be lighter on the folks. But look at, if this party was, as we're told, supposedly was under the influence of some substance. If this is the truth, then imagine, how do you treat this person? Do you treat them with a light sentence or work furlough or what have you? Or do you put them in a cell and let them stay where they should stay? Get them out of society. But I don't know which is more painful or gutsy, is to be able to run someone over and leave them to die, or to be able to drive by that site every day or every other day and keep a straight face. That's very puzzling. Drop my pen here. Anyway, a little more stuff on the, you know, we have the molasses out there in the harbor, and things happen. We're changing subjects here. Things happen. We know that accidents happen, pipes can rust, but look at the types of incidents and the magnitude of them that we witness. Remember the Cape Flattery, the cement, the ship that came in with the cement, and then the state stood by and the Coast Guard stood by and authorized them to offload the cement to get it off the reef, and they spilled and damaged a lot more. And bring to your attention the incident of the medical waste. What happened there? Look at the magnitude. Look at the impacts. We still can't quantify the impacts of the medical waste. Not to mention what the cost was to repair it and to the taxpayer. And to the city up top on the landfill, and now we have the molasses, which brings me to an interesting point. Many times, and a while back, I've shared with you the willingness and this militarization of our harbors, and all under the name of protecting and national security. And what have you. And the reality is, the damage that for years we've been traversing that area, citizens go down and drive in, no problem, not many problems. But how is it that they could have behind a secure gate with, because of international concerns for terrorism and all of that, that they drop their guards, and they being the state and the EPA, apparently once that gate is closed, you get to do and operate any way you want to as a business. So no transparency. So the danger here is when you lock these gates and close them and put a big sign saying, do not enter, this is a zone, a security zone and all, but all kinds of craziness is going on behind the gate, and nobody's going in there and policing them. It's a free fall. And then if you drive by Sand Island at Pier 52, over the years, I've watched these big tanks that you would see there, just sitting there. And I've often wondered, why aren't the tanks placarded? They have a placard. And you look at them, and they have some smudges dripping down, and it's a marine environment. Why aren't they doing anything about it? And so I had the occasion, I got a call, someone told me to come down to see it on the first day. What they had said was they had evidence and video that it was turning brown before that day that it was the first day I went down, and apparently before the state went down. And what I witnessed there was, you know, I was a game warden in California, and I was worked on the environmental response team. This is how California treats it. And many other states I witnessed. When you have something, an incident like this, you immediately, you have a response, and that response is you show up with plastic bags after you've quantified it. You have the scientists testing it and making sure that it's not something that's corrosive and going to injure the parties out there. So you immediately come out there. You don't know what happened. In this case, they knew what happened. But it seemed like it was the standard gentleman's agreement with this Abercrombie administration. And I'll say that because back at the landfill, the medical waste, Gary Gill and those folks authorized them to dump the medical waste. You see? Because they were trying to conceal the fact that they knew that there were about 7 million gallons of water in a cell that was at risk of bursting and flooding out Kahi Power Plant, believe it or not. And I've reported this before on the show many, about a year or so ago. So the response, everyone came down in slacks and penny loafers and aloha shirts, and if you, the proverbial thumb up your butt, I saw a whole team of people with a thumb up their butts. And what I witnessed, and I was saying to a couple of them, well, you know, look, what I was told, it was coming from the pier on Sand Island. It was molasses. A pipe broke, kind of a pressurized pipe, and it broke. Oh, no, you don't know that. You don't know that. You don't really know. And I'm thinking, okay, I see where this is going. But back to this cleanup squad, so to speak. What normally would happen in other states, the ones that are professionally trained and committed to protecting the resources, led by people that know what the heck they're doing, you'd show up with a, we call it the broom squad. And what would happen is that you'd show up with your rubber gloves, rubber booties, that would galoshes like, and even because you don't know what it is, you get the all clear sign, and you know, but in this case they knew. And then you bring nets, and you bring an army of people with cameras, video cameras, and you start taking names and asking people questions and documenting. That's what you do. And you take the fish, and then you decide immediately what are some of the alternatives, what can we do. You see, I watched until the dark of night, nothing happening, nothing, with the exception of there at Pier 38, there was, I think it was Penco, they came in with a boat and with a net and started to scoop out some of the fish that were either dying or dead. But where was DLNR? This is a natural resources, or natural resource, it is fish dying. And if you're a fisherman, you know that when you get fined, sometimes you get fined per fish. So why didn't we see an immediate action on the part of DLNR to be there armed with pen, pencil, paper, video, documenting, making evidence, creating a chain of custody, stockpiling and store, making sure to store these? Because eventually, if you went to court, you're going to need evidence to show the impact, or you can extrapolate something. You can arrive at some conclusion, but you don't just walk into court unless you're dealing with a gentleman's agreement, as they do in this town. You know, someone early on says, well, it's about $25,000 fine. And imagine, no one collecting samples. Collecting samples now, or collecting evidence and labeling them. And each squirrel, fish, each eel, each, it's considered a species, of individual species, and you quantify the numbers. And that all adds up in saying, because if you go to Kehi and you don't have any samples of fish, you can say, well, the water was brown, but the question is, as you start to pound the tables in court, but yes, it was brown, but did it have any impact? Did it kill anything? Color is everything, right? But did it have any impact? Did it kill anything? And I'm not second guessing. It's just that, you know, and one can say, easily say that I'm just now projecting and laying my thoughts over after the fact. No, I'm saying to you, these incidents, the types of them, they repeat themselves, and we find ourselves standing around with the professionals that we pay great salaries. We put them in training. We send them off to federal training, federal schools, do all of that. Sick pay, leave, you just retirement pay, pension. And all that we can get is the guys run to the edge of the water with penny loafers on and standing there. Well, I think when they already know or should have a relationship in this town with anyone that has the potential of impact and resources, that if you dare not call us and give us specifics when you know, we will prosecute you. Don't call us in the wee night, dark of the night, and then expect us to come out with flashlight after you decide. You better tell us immediately. But going back up, you go over there, and generally, in modern times, and this is even before the wheel, when they had containers, they would put a bunker just as a safeguard in the spill. And they would go in, especially in a marine environment, you would always do sound tests or stress tests for the pipes. And you would change them occasionally. So, and you know you're dealing with the substance that the molasses also, in many instances, have a large percentage of amount of sulfur in it. So what's killing the fish? How is the pH being changed? So I stood there and watched this, and I'm thinking, well, if they were smart, they could come in and pump some oxygen. Well, that would probably be a futile act, but at least something. But rather than just standing there and talking, and I share a little side story with you. So there's Gary Gill, and I'm watching, and I watch him walk around, and I'm thinking, well, gee, he's really intent on doing something, whatever it is. And he walks the harbor, which is good. And later on, I approached him and wanted to get a comment or what have you for the show here. And he was too busy, didn't have the time. Later on, he wasn't going to give any statements. But KITV showed up, and there he is. I'm standing there. He grants them an interview. And so I asked him, well, Gary Gill, motivated you to give them an interview while I've asked you for an hour or so ago? And says, well, they have thousands of people watching. You don't. So, again, it's about what, numbers? Is it about getting the job done? And if he had lent himself to a moment or two to listen, I could have imparted a bit of knowledge, because I have a background in response and what you could do or couldn't do and what you should do to preserve evidence. I have that knowledge. But he stared right through me and said no. Well, then later he promised to send me a public relations release, a press release, the following day. So how is it that you can decide you're not going to give an interview, grant an interview to me, but KITV shows up and you say, oh yeah, because, and your justification is that they have thousands of people listening. So I guess myself and my one listener doesn't, just don't rise to the occasion or the level of importance. But got news for them. I think there's more than two people listening. And those, the two of them are the brightest people and the most committed and the most active. And they're not the people who are apathetic. So there's a great danger, Gary. You could have 15,000 apathetic people watching, but only two people that'll kick into action, write your letters, and hold you accountable. So don't be too jaded about the 15,000 or the numbers. But again, this site down there, I got some calls. There was a gentleman who was going to call in from Maui. He called, and this is the same guy who saw the story of me with the foam that showed up on the shoreline over there back of Camel Industrial Park. And he, at that time, suggested that I go out and get giant vacuums, backpack vacuums, and suck it up like weed blowers. Well, this was a, and it worked. It was, I was able to do that and clean up a large area. And then the state saw that and was motivated and to go and buy several of those and stand there and suck up the foam. And I've gotten calls from different people around the country and around the world, even in Japan and Alaska. Someone called me from those two areas asking to tell them about this. So you never know who you can get information from or a suggestion, but fishermen were calling, and they were outraged. And so here's the thing. The economical impacts that, how did they address that, or will they? Take, for example, the fish auction. So when the fishing boats come in, they have the fish, many of them have the fish caked in ice. They wash the fish down, use the water, to, it's out of the ocean, and pump. So what if they now, what costs are they going to experience, the fishermen, the fishing boats, who are arriving at the auction to offload their fish? They're going to have to find more water from other sources to melt down the ice so that they can offload their fish. Just that simple impact. Now, I doubt if the state or Matson or anyone has inquired about that. I saw Mr. Isla say that there's no, they can't document any impacts on turtles or monk seal. But how would we know? And so this impact that they're talking about, I have a question that suggests, let's say, if I'm not mistaken, that ceded land, the Hawaiians have a great interest in it. Do they get compensated? There's many people go down there and fish in that area and for subsistence. You and I may not accept that or think that it's important, but what about them? Are they being impacted? So when I heard the $25,000, something like that, rattle off, and I'm thinking, wow, what a cheap shot, because we don't even know what it is. We don't know if it was even intentional. It could have been someone that sabotaged the facility, just talking out loud. But what I saw was, when it comes to the environment, everything along the harbors and the pier areas is behind closed gates, locked gates, in the interest of national security. But local security and the welfare of the people seems to have to take back seat to all of this. So I think they've gone to the extreme and this so-called security concerns, and then not intensifying or riding and patrolling and documenting and monitoring the businesses that are found there. What are they doing? You know, they don't have the manpower. The Harbor Patrol surely don't have the manpower to go through and inspect. And does the DOT, do they? I've gone through their files many occasions and found that they don't know half of what's occurring on lease properties. So I think this entire process should be revisited, revamped, the permitting, the, and I even believe that we should go under one roof in this state, that we need to rethink our handling of the environmental concerns, because you have the Hawaii Department of Health environmental branch. It has its approach, lazy, unprofessional, dysfunctional, and underfunded, if you ask them. But $2 to them is a bit too much when you see the repeated failures and environmental impacts. So you have the environmental concerns being managed by the Hawaiian Health Department. And then found under them, then there's a hazardous emergency response, environmental response. And then you have different branches, clean water, clean act. So the same resource now, this one harbor, so they show up at the harbors. But the DLNR has the fish, the land, and the boat harbors, the harbor master or harbor patrol has, and DOT has the patrolling of the area. So everything when it comes to the resources is so fragmented that, and no one is really talking to one another. They don't have a professional response plan. They talk about the lack of a spill plan for Matson. Ask the state, what is your oil spill response? What do you do with the birds that we're going? What are you going to do with the turtles? What facility do you take them? You see, HPU was out there doing some filming and all. Where was the DLNR's camera crew, dive crew? Because they have concerns for the management of the coral, fish, the turtles, the marine mammals, the birds. What about them? What about the migratory birds? And in that area, by the way, you see the brown booby at least, and you see other migrants that come through here occasionally. You have the fairy tern, or the Hawaiian tern, the white tern, and redfoot boobies drift about here. What about them? Who's quantifying? Did they coordinate with the military base there at Kaneohe to say, okay, this material is going to drift out at sea? They told us that it's going to go out at sea. But what was the response plan to go to Kaneohe Marine Base and monitor the redfoot booby colony or the other birds that they're colonizing that area to check to see if they were impacted when they dive for food and the molasses are floating on the surface or in the water? So to say that, and they seem to be focusing right there on the, it's killing the coral right here. All of those things. And to say it didn't impact turtles is a premature statement and irresponsible on the part of anyone that made it. To say that it didn't have an impact on the monk seal, that's not accurate either. Because if you go to Sand Island, right there in one of the first turns by the old Sand Island Tower, you'll see occasionally one or two monk seals hauled out there. And that, this material moved toward Kehi Lagoon, for example, it would be impossible for the monk seal not to be impacted, being with the sticky mess on his skin or his fur or her fur or whatever. So going back to this idea, if you knew what I knew, I think the biggest waste of money is the DLNR, the Department of Health, because they don't work for the people in a preventive fashion. They, even if we had food spoilage or poison foods or foods that were found to be contaminated, they don't talk to you openly. In many occasions, I've shown you where, unless I would go out and ferret out and learn through ways of people calling and tipping me off, we wouldn't even know that there was spoilage or salmonella and fish that is sold by the main grocery stores. And when you do find out, remember Fukino, Kiyomi Fukino, whatever her name, she was a head before Gary Gill, or before. So they wouldn't tell the public that there was salmonella, but people were getting sick, and we exposed that. So this whole thing seems to be, they're more guided, and their purpose in life is to protect the big business. Because, as they say, we don't want to impact the businesses. It would cause an economic hardship on the business. So they live under those pretenses, and then when something happens, it has an impact on all of us. And never knowing and considering the value, the cost, all of this. So I believe that the legislators should revisit the total structure of the Hawaiian governmental setup. If we're going to have three people, too many cooks in the kitchen, remember that? When we have three agencies, and you see, if I witness the DLNR standing there abreast of Gary Gill, that would be one thing. Didn't see that. So Gary is talking about, well, you got some fish and it's in sight, and but where is the DLNR? Where were the boats? Well, I can tell you one had a tree still growing out of it up there, so they wouldn't be able to use that one. But who is looking out for the resources? You might think that Mattson did it and they're going to be punished. But in a courtroom and in a legal system, as we know it in our culture, you better bring the goods to show the damage. You better demonstrate to show the damage. You see? And again, why should we rethink this whole thing? Bring back and consolidate. I think it would do many things. First of all, it would save a lot of money. And we would revamp and rebuild this with professionals. And I don't mean, I was told that a great percentage of the DLNR people wouldn't have been able to come, especially in the law enforcement, because they were on their second job. So what is going on here? We need to simply combine, restructure. As it relates to the environment, I'm sure you probably could make this argument, too, with many other issues and instances. But in this case, I believe, based on the ineptness, the unprofessional response, I don't know any case that has ever gone to court. And I suspect why. It always end up going to the federal government, unless the EPA gets involved. But other states will prosecute you, will take you to the dance and stand toe-to-toe with you. But in this state, we show up at the scene in an apologetic mode, making excuses. Well, we don't really know what it is. We really can't quantify. We really, you know, it might have, it'll blow off and drift out to sea. And, well, look in here, folks. If it drifts out to sea, it still has the same impact, just in a wider area. What about a dredge? What about suction? To go in there and they're talking about it suspended. Any fool would know you take molasses. You've heard that term. It's thick as molasses. But our professional people, the ones we pay and the ones we train, well, it was shameful. And I say you probably wouldn't draw the same conclusion, but having witnessed many spills and what have you, and see how professional other states do it, and the training that goes on, and the equipment you show up with. I mean, immediately, you're out there sampling, my friend, and you're taking time. You're taking temperature of the water so that if Mattson or whoever it is that's responsible for this and get charged, it won't be a debate of where's your evidence. It'll be a debate of, well, how can we settle out? How do you know that this material is from Mattson? How do you know that, state? Well, in California, in those places, they would be out there and say, well, you know, look, this could end up in a prosecution or what have you. So we're going to, you know, we're going to sit down and interview you formally to preserve your rights and preserve the interests of the people. But not in this case. This was foot dragging. I think I could go, well, I'm not going to insult the people. I think I could go on the street and find the average Joe to do what they've done and to how they responded. And it's not over. I mean, you wait. The magnitude of this, as I've said early on the John Nolan show when it first occurred the first day, you just don't know the impact. And when you see the vegetation, the limu, and all that dying, and I was down there and hundreds of crabs in a little area. I counted 50 eel on the first day that I was there dying or dead just in the Pier 38 area. And what were they doing? They look good, folks. I got to tell you, wherever they got those Aloha shirts from, shucks, man, I was belittled. I thought, man, how did they get to dress like that? And I'm standing around here trying to worry about molasses getting in my shoe sole, and they're standing around looking good. Not a single rubber glove, not a single sample, not a single thermometer, nothing. But they look good. But I guess they can look good because we pay them so much. But anyway, I'll be back in the next hour, and 524-1080, if you'd like to call, we'll be talking other subjects. So talk to you later. Aloha.
The second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu K108. It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. 524-1080 if you have a comment or something you'd like to share with us. 524-1080. And we're just talking about the molasses spill. And again, I'm soliciting information or call in or on behalf of this individual woman, Miss Ramika Roy, who was run over and hit and run driver back in 1/14/2006 and Nanakuli there area, right at Ma'aloa and Farrington Highway. So if anybody, if you have anything you'd like to share with us, give me a call at 782-6627, and I will keep you private. Only thing is, we'll be going to the police and sharing this. So, but let's bring some closure for this family, and let's get this person and this person know who you are, and we think we know who you are, too, so. Somebody will be knocking on your door soon. And so the best thing to do is speak to your God or whatever your spiritual leader is and find a way with your people that participated with you and go down and turn yourself in. We're going to be, I won't call it hot pursuit, but just know that there's a family there was, they had their loved one shredded, ripped away from them. And you drove off like a thief in the night. So we'll talk to you on that one later. But 524-1080. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Just a comment, Cal.
Yes.
You know, you're absolutely right with your assessment of this molasses response. You know, in other states, by now, they would have set up some kind of incident command system, or they would have established a unified command where all of the agency representatives would be present at a command post trying to figure out the overall strategy and objectives in order to clean this thing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm very shocked that what we're getting through the media seems to be a fragmented response by multiple agencies who seem to be pointing the finger at each other.
Right.
and, you know, what even lends the less confidence is the fact that they've called in the feds now. And when you publicize something like that, it almost sends a message that we don't know what we're doing, so let's call for help.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get the warm and fuzzy feeling that our government is doing the right thing and doing those things that are typically what would be expected in such a response of such a large scale, such that you would see on the mainland. I think your assessment is spot on, Carol.
Right. Well, thank you. And we need some change because, honestly, I know day in, day out, there is nothing professional about our responses. And the bottom line is that it could be a leak of gases or chemicals that are harmful to human beings as well, not just to fish. And we get the same response.
You know? I would agree with you there. And you know, I guess the reason why I called this is I, too, am bothered by what appears to be the level of response that we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to be getting mixed messages from a variety of public information people. You know, you would think by now they would have a single voice for this response rather than what seems to be a comedy of laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, well, I'll take your response offline, and you have a great day.
Thank you so much. Aloha.
Bye-bye.
You know, it would be so easy for one to listen in and then go away thinking that this guy's just radical. He's always off the handle with this anti-government sentiment. He knows everything. The fact is, I do know everything. What I do know everything about is that we have the most dysfunctional, dishonest system here that's set up. We are paying through our noses in taxes to fund lazy, unprofessional, just illiterate people. When it comes, you have the welfare of the resources, which you forever claim that it's fragile, irreplaceable, and the most in representation of the most endangered species around the world. You tell us all of this, and then you turn around and behave as if you're operating out of a brown paper bag. You don't even have a collection kit, a professional collection kit. I didn't see a single person there with a cooler with ice bag, a simple ice bag to preserve the temperature of the samples that you collect that would have been consistent with EPA's requirements of whether it was soil or the water or the plants or anything. You didn't preserve the integrity. Just that simple act would have given me a degree of comfort and trust that, hey, these boys are rolled up on the scene, and now we can just sit back and watch because they... But then I have to remind myself, we shouldn't even be at this point because they should have had a cleanup plan, a backup plan, a spill plan, and all of that. It's one thing for Matson not to have a backup plan or a spill plan. That's okay, you know. No problem. But what about the regulatory body who we pay to ensure that there is there's compliance. See, that's how I draw the conclusion and go out on the limb as go as far saying that this is gentlemen's treatment. Anywhere else, they would be sitting you down and formally interviewing you and taking your formal statement. And then at the end of the day, maybe it was as simple, it was an act of God. Hey, bro, no problem. It's unavoidable. But in these instances, and here's the long shot of this is what's going to happen is that you the Port Royal, Cape Flattery, and there's going to be a big settlement, and there's going to be a big talk about this. Let me ask you something. Has Governor Neil Abercrombie, under his administration, they received money from the settlement on one of those incidences. Where did that money go? Why didn't we use that money to enhance the response teams or have professional trained people? Where did that money go? You never heard anything about it, right? So, likewise, what's going to happen with the medical waste? What happened to the fines? Remember? They barked from the hill high on Mount Everest. We're going to fine them and what have you. When in fact Gary Gill knew that he had authorized it. How on earth can you authorize an act and then turn around and prosecute him? Well, with the exception of you being George Grace, and as I demonstrated here with the DHHL, hey, go ahead and dig all that up and do your grading and all. And we exempted you from the permits, but then when he... It was a complaint. They changed their mind. Leave him hanging. But I'm being a little comical here. But let me say to you, I'm not just tossing it out and being flippant about this. I'm saying to you, you should ask your legislators to have a hearing. And because, you see, there are other issues here. There are other elements of things of greater threat. There's use of plutonium, use of radiation, radiated materials and isotopes, and all of that. We have the military here. We have airplanes transporting things. What is our response? Just to gather up the bodies? How do we prevent this? Right? I mean, Is it a message that something is attempting to send us? That just along with the molasses spill we had in one area where all the sirens go off accidentally, somebody hit the wrong button or what have you? Folks, this isn't about me picking on them and playing Monday morning quarterback. I'm saying to you, from a professional standpoint, time and time again, I've demonstrated to you that on a magnitude of 1 to 10, these issues, make top news story, the ones that I bring to your attention? And how is it that it repeats itself over and over and you have the same system set up? The DLNR thinks the right hand is taking care of the left hand. So the DLNR is handling this. The State Health Department is handling this. Well, what about this? Oh, that's a Harbor Patrol. Well, who do we call? Oh, well, don't call the Harbor Patrol. That's Coast Guard. And so imagine there's no continuity. And it is a miscarriage of common sense. It really is. It is something that, can we continue to accept this? We will be in a cesspool environmentally at this rate. We've already dug ourselves a deep hole. But imagine, I didn't see a single state officer or personnel with a coverall on. And that's what you generally try to throw on a coverall, because you don't want to take whatever it is. And you're going to get dirty because you're going to go to work. Got a problem. But instead, what happens? They stand around, and I suspect nothing will come. And they always, if you look at every single case, whether it was in Miley Stream where the cement was dumped, the state land and natural resources, they stood there and exempted them, gave them permission, wouldn't do anything. Health department, wouldn't do anything. Army Corps of Engineer, they came but reluctantly. Then they gave it to the EPA. But guess what? After the fact, the state then, oh, well, we're going to fine them and we're going to do this and we're going to accept. Whatever happened to these monies? Why isn't it going back into not the environmental revolving fund where you get so much per barrel of oil, but when you have fines like this, you look to recover, to rebuild or reestablish a species in an area or the reestablish the environment. You can't duplicate nature, but you try to restore it. And that restoration comes from the monies you take from the violator or the party that accident, whatever. A spill is a spill and a spill kills. So whatever it is and however you arrive at this point. But we need to say to the governor, and the governor has the medical waste on his list. Now he has the molasses on his list. And guess who he had at the helm of the environmental department? Gary Gill. Where's a proactive approach to this? You know, I think they have maybe one or two trucks for emergency response. But this was on a work day. So anyway, the proposal or the suggestion that they combine the agencies together and hiring and soliciting. There's some new kids on the block that got biology degrees and science degrees and background, and they're desperate to work. They want to work. They haven't gotten lazy and fattened with two jobs. They don't even have a job, but they want to work. They're out volunteering. You'd have an army of volunteer students wanting to do this if you had something set up. But if the environment and the welfare of the people is not your first place, but if it's you want to be a gentleman and get along with Mattson and whoever it is, but just put in a name there, tomorrow it'll be someone else. If it's your reason to do that, then we're never going to have professionalism arriving at the shoreline to sample and monitor and protect the interests of the people. You're never going to get it. So the media tells you, oh, look at the fish, they're dying now. Let's get some depth into this. Let's understand that the thermoclines at lower levels, the molasses is going to be a little more stiffer, thicker than molasses. And it's going to coat, you know. Creme brulee, if you've ever seen creme brulee, you heat it up and it'll turn to a glass. Well, the temperatures are not that cold. I don't know the viscosity of molasses at certain temperatures, but I will submit to you that whatever it is, it's covering and it is adhering to the plant life and the substrate, And when you see, I hope if you get a chance before, go down and just walk, and you'll get to see for yourself. When you see one rock, and there could be 50, 60, 70 crab dead, not moving now, dead, just frozen as if someone sprayed ice over them. So it's something that that really it needs to be revisited. The legislators, they did an audit on DLNR DoCare, but I think that the Aquatics Division, the Forestry Division, the Health Department Solid Waste Branch, and all of that, they are paper pushers. They are never going to go into court and prosecute anybody criminally, not the health department, because they're not trained, they're not skilled, and when you go to a property and someone is accused of illegal dumping and you shake his hand, oh, hi, you know, may we come in and can we look around and, you know, and if we find something, no worry, we're just going to see if we can, you see. And then that person sits down and tells you everything, spills his guts. And then you're going to prosecute him? What about his rights as a citizen under the Constitution? You didn't protect him. You just had this guy to spill his gut to tell you what he just did and how he violated the law. You're going to walk into court with that product? So these are the telling signs that we need to revisit and restructure our system that we call the environmental protection and the health and services and all of that, because it's not there. You can't walk in the court and go, well, here he is, Your Honor. He told me all of this. And, well, then that person's lawyer saying, well, gee, did you advise my client of his right? I didn't know it was going to be $80 million. Fine, I would have shut up and gone and got myself a lawyer. You think I'm stupid? But you told me everything was going to work out. So it will never get to court because the state will never, ever do anything to make it, to document the health department. DLNR will never, ever do anything from a standpoint because they don't have the expertise, they don't have the intentions, and the politics behind it won't allow it. Good morning, call. A comment or question?
Thank you for taking my call. I don't want to change the theme of your program.
Okay, well, let's don't do that.
Okay.
No, I'm teasing.
No, because I was going to talk about today's paper, the $1 million exemption raise, the general excise tax, the bus, the vans, and the meetings that were held last week.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, today's paper, council okayed changes in the property tax, $1 million exemption, they want to charge a tax. So now, because they need money for the rail, they're going to get to those who have the most. And what is going to happen in the future when there's no general excise tax, no federal money? It's got to be property tax.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the services, in terms of cost, they cut bus services. Vans have many, 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 many empirical problems. Before MUFI, the federal government gave 50% for the bus, 50% funding for the van. With the inception of the rail, it's 33-33 arbitrarily. They took 5307 money, contingency money from the van, and they used it for rail. Going to what happened just this week, and I attended one of the meetings, I don't know chronologically for facts, so maybe some of your listeners could correct me, but I think that on Thursday the 5th, there was a request by HART for immediate special management permit. On Sunday's newspaper, Time to Get Rolling on Rail Transit, there was an article on the editorial page, and I could go into that. Monday, they had the special city council. How does the public know from Sunday to Monday that there's going to be a special city council meeting involving revisions, additions, special permitting? Then on Wednesday, they have the full council, all nine members. Now, specifically, in terms of Time to Get Rolling, why does HART need the council to convene a special now? Because they don't have the money, mm-hmm. They don't have the time. The article goes on, fixed hard rail, not soft rail. What were we told about in the first? Red letter day for the city council. No, a day of infamy, because when Anderson, and his chairperson, okay, I'll go on. The taxpayers are being deprived of knowledge. They, from the beginning, they never considered the whole salami. They sliced up financing, construction, safety, so they could get this through. And they're in terrible, terrible financial condition right now. Was the entire project done right in the first place? Please, listeners, ask yourself any aspect of this project. What changes have been made and why? Start with going through Salt Lake, and now they go to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
How many changes have there been that have cost the public money? Public hearings are for Go Rail, not education. I've been to several.
Right.
They are advocacy for the rail, not for the education of the people.
Yeah, well, we've heard all of this over and over, and I don't see anybody charging down to the state capitol or the city hall to say to Kimberly Pine, to Manahan, and Ekaika Anderson and all that we get is that, well, Ekaika is going to run for office, and
yep.
He's going to go for Congress. So it's almost like I'm beginning to think I want to focus my attention on protecting the birds and the snails. And,
okay.
And, no, I'm just, you know, you get my drift? It's,
no, I understand your drift.
It's like, why don't I help something that can't speak for itself, so to speak?
And, no, but we could speak for ourselves.
Yeah, and we don't. And it's like, well, at least I can believe anything that the snail will be just as happy, and will, if they could, they'd march down here and tell them off.
But it's not a done deal.
Yeah, well, what you think? Where is the hope?
The hope of the people. You've got to get the people together. I was there by myself with at least 80 to 100 other people.
Right.
I was there with the carpenters, the electricians, and all the unions.
Mm-hmm.
I was there with big business. I was there with the 10 HART members.
Right.
I sat behind Grabowskis and next to Ivan Kwan. And I'll tell you this, I was alone, and I am not going to quit.
Right, I understand.
And
but
until
the
people come together and try to stop this, they have a power.
Well, I agree with you, but again, it's like, where are they? Maybe they ain't listening, or maybe they got the money and it's no problem, you know. Hey, go ahead. I got $1 million house, so I can afford it. A little bit of
taxes. Of course, but the it's our money.
I know. You're preaching to...
Yeah, but I mean, your listeners also, I know you do, but you have to understand that the listeners don't seem to realize that your general excise tax is your money. 0.5% is the money that is added on to whatever you purchased.
Well, I would say all of it is our money, because I don't know, not a single one of those have come and says, here, I want to run for office, and now that I'm in, I'm going to bring my checkbook, and I'm going to operate from my checkbook, my personal checkbook. All of the monies and the decisions that they make is based on our monies.
Yep.
So those are automatics. We know that, and that's why we get so fooled, duped into thinking, and we don't send the message. Look at the exchange of, you talk about the rail and this, but look at the exchange. Rami Kocholla, he decides, well, you know, my time's up. I can only stay here 2 terms.
Yep.
But Manahan, you and I swing a deal, and what we'll do is, you dupe them here, and I'll dupe them there, and then you go and take my office, and you run for office over there, and I'll help you, and you know. So, and then the people go, oh, I like Romy. He good man. And, oh, and, you know, yeah, well, suck it up, and, you know, it's kind of hard to go jumping back in a fire 10 times to rescue the same guy. You know, running back in, pulling them out and running, you know, it's like enough already. It's maybe this is what they need, and keep taxing them, and eventually they'll be crawling out on the street and raising hell, you know, because...
But just consider history and how many times people have been rejected in the movements. and people kept going and trying.
That's what I'm saying. Eventually, you maybe there's a limit. Maybe 1,200,000 is enough. It would break the backs of everybody, you know, and so then we'll see a revolt, a revolution. But apparently everyone's operating from a, and I'm not discouraging you. I agree with you. We should pursue this, but I'm just openly, overtly expressing myself to the other side of the dark side, in that if you can't muster them up, and there's example after example after example, then where is the relief?
Got to come from the people.
Yeah, but I mean, the people. What is the stimulant?
Okay,
what?
You've got to get together the people who have some access to transparency.
Right.
Your programs, other radio shows, the television, mm-hmm. and then you've got to get ample proof. You've got to hurt them to change their ways, either through they're losing their power, they're the revolving door, mm-hmm. or in the pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to find something that they care about. Right now, they are in a cocoon.
Mm, you're right.
In a demagogic cocoon, and they only listen to each other.
Yeah, and I just heard something that'll... A couple of guys and we were sitting around drinking some coffee and beer. and by the way, Richard, it was actually one of them was drinking Tsing Tao.
Oh, God. God bless him. We're doing well for the Chinese economy.
And they had run out, you know, and I'm thinking, by golly, do I get Richard on the phone here and have him to bring me, you know, mercy route? But anyway, what happens is I actually, and we're sitting around talking. Are you sitting down? Are you? Okay. Hold on to your chair. Mufi Hanneman, my friend told me. He's told me that Mufi has been shopping around and says that he's going to run for city council.
I saw that in the paper a week ago.
Yeah, you saw that. Well, yeah. but he was openly soliciting people to campaign for him. You see what I mean?
Well, see, this is unconscionable. You're not going to... No, it is. You're not going to appeal to any morality or ethics with these people. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hey, if they buy it, I'm going to go protect the birds.
Yeah, I can understand. I feel for you also. I did want to say something positive about... I've always supported Ann Kobayashi, but she's all alone. And, of course, Barbara Marshall was the best that's been in the city council. But maybe Manahan and Menor could possibly be helpful. I'm not sure, but Manahan and Menor seem to be obviously well-educated, but they certainly don't have the vote for anything significant on the council.
How did they vote?
They usually vote with reservation, but we both know that simply means a yes.
Right, and Menor, or Menor, whatever his name is, he was what, state senator?
And, yes, it's...
And so he's been in the system, right? Yep. And he's been tidy-whitey with those guys. And then
exactly.
Manahan, remember, he swung his deal with... He was a state representative.
Yes.
And, you know, and I reported... We talk about how great he is. He's the same guy who hires his wife as a secretary in the office, so they don't have any ethics. So, you know, I just don't have a short memory.
Yeah.
And it all adds up, you know, if you...
Well, a lot of this I'm unaware of.
Well, yeah, I know, but I was just being a little cocky with you there, just talking about... But the reality is I would never abandon these issues, but I just use that moment to say to the listeners, the taxpayers, wake up!
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and in terms of morality, ethics, and your children, grandchildren's future, you better wake up.
Yeah.
You're going to lose general excise tax and federal money. Who in the hell is going to pay for all the services for the county?
Well, all of these guys that are in office got big bucks, and, you know, so they come with pocket loaded with money, right? And they're going to bail us out, right?
They bail out Stockton and they bail out Detroit?
No. I mean the politicians.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
They're going to bail us out because that's why they want the seat, right? They want to come in and do good because they're bringing their money to the table and they're going to help us all.
Yeah.
And you understand, and so,
of course I do.
And half of them don't have two nickels to rub together, but boy, do they know how to work the system and work for the big boy, the big money, the big business.
It started with Mufi and campaign spending.
Core Ridge. Ho'opili.
Of course.
Right? And so we're talking about, and Kimberly Pine, she votes for any, she hadn't seen a dollar she couldn't wave her hands at because she thinks she's going to.
And who is chairman of the zoning committee?
Who is that?
Ikaika Anderson.
Oh, you mean our former.
And guess who his vice chairman is? Breen Horimoto.
Okay. Well, that's good, though, because and now that's going to project and propel him into the position of congressman.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know, and then, you know, well, that's the way it is, man. And the newspaper tell you who to vote for. And,
exactly.
And we all go, well, you know, he's a good guy. Yeah, really. What have they done? We're in a point where we're about our breaks. We're at the breaking point financially as a state.
That's why they're raising all these fees, licenses, and everything else.
Yeah. You know, you go on the computer to go recover documents through, let's say, e-crime or what have you. The cost of that, you got to pay just to use public records.
Yes.
You know, and so the cost goes up, so you would think they would be computerizing everything to take traffic off the, where you could operate from your office would require traffic, will contribute to reduction of traffic, because when you and I get in the car to drive down to the state office to pick up a record, that's two cars on the road.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But imagine if we could do it from home feasibly, it would be, but we're spinning through our noses, being bled from both ends, and in turn, someone else is proposing more taxes. We haven't seen what Caldwell is going to present to us.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, anyway, I don't know much about this subject. I just listen and, you know, and...
Well, I've tried to follow it for 5 years.
Well, I mean, I've watched it. I just find it to be rather painful just seeing the human response to it, you know, that it's going to bring in jobs.
Well, just and, take one issue. Take, for example, sea fodder. The people on the van, I'm with them 2-3 times a week. And this is one thing that keeps me going, the way they're being taken advantage of.
Well.
And it is very sad that a person on the dialysis is going to lose time.
Mm-hmm.
I get so angry.
Well, anyway, we'll see what happens with
this. Okay, thank you very much.
Anytime, Richard.
Okay, bye.
All righty. Okay. Anyway, the I don't mean to be insensitive or sound insensitive. I would never walk away in a manner. It's not my nature. But at some point, you know, how do you keep speaking on behalf of people and raising these issues, and then it's the same thing, and then you vote the same people in. You get the Kimberly Pines, and you get all of these people, and you're encouraging them by not doing anything. They think you approve of them, and the next thing they know, they're announcing they're running for Congress, Senate. We don't tax them with the act. Hanabusa, what have you really done, Colleen Hanabusa? Really, what have you done? What can we say that when you walk out the door for the last time, what will we remember you by that you did good for the people? I know you were a labor union lawyer or whatever. But the unions don't do very well for the people. The union guys are making big bucks. The heads, they make big bucks. But if you talk to the rank and file, they can't even get a grievance. They can't even get the union heads to follow through on grievance because they're busy playing golf with the Mufi Hannemans and everybody else and all the people that are proposing because it's going to bring in jobs. But you have just a complete, in that sense, if I shared with you the stories and the hardship that I've heard from union members, it's the guys on top who you see wearing the red shirts, the blue shirts, honking their horns in the unions. They're the ones who have sold out, the HGEA, the Randy Pereiras. People in Board of Water Supply got complaints, but they can't get the complaints moved forward. Environmental Services at the City and County of Honolulu, Lori Kahakina. who's telling her that you got a bunch of corruption in there and yet she won't listen? This is what the union does. People have grievances. They can't even process a grievance. But they show up at the community boards, they show up at the city hall to say, I'm union this, and I'm from this union, and I'm the president of this union, and we support this. Of course you do, but you don't support your people that you rank and file. The entire system, folk, is corrupt, completely corrupt. They have no allegiance, they being the union heads, no allegiance unless you need special favor, and they're going to get you so that you can go and cook and wash dishes for the next political campaign. Other than that, you're out. You sit there empty. You don't get a job, though you got all the certifications, your union dues, but certain people get paid, get jobs, others stay at home and try to eke out a living. You have a complaint. You file a complaint. It goes nowhere. These are realities. And so, again, all of you out there, if you're getting it from the front, the back, the side, and in turn you go back and vote for these people, maybe you should consult God, because you ain't listening to the rest. Don't vote for these knuckleheads. Just vote them out. Tell your bigwig union guys, the leaders, vote them out. That's where you start. If you're looking for somebody to tell you where to start, start voting them out. You don't have to wait until the elections for the political election. Start voting and demanding as a unit in your unions. Don't go and support Mufi Hanneman. Don't go and support Kurt Caldwell. But every year you hear, well, this union supports this person. This union supports that person. Endorses there. In the meantime, the union heads will not even give sufficient time or fair time or just do their job and protect the workers. So, is it corrupt? You bet it is. Is it really failing? You bet it is. Is there any hope? Unless you get off your duff and do something and start sending them a strong message that nobody is going to take you for a ride. And we collectively, we all have to make specific statements, and those statements are actions, not just words. And let these people, send them the message. Tell them, we don't need you. You go down the rail. All the unions are going out there, and they're getting all of this. And the problem is, they're going to bring in the rail, bring in the jobs, but what materials were produced here? They're bringing in road and highway builders. Openly told you they're going to come and build roads and all, but they're going to bring new crews from the mainland. You tell me there's nobody, young man in Leawood College or anywhere in a trade school that can't learn to operate these pieces of equipment that you got to bring in, and you're going to get jobs, the same jobs that the politicians told you, oh, we're going to do this and it's going to create jobs. And then you create the jobs, but then you allow these companies to stand up and tell you openly that they're going to bring people from outside. That's a system to tell you that the union people are getting paid too much. And they don't have the interest in the locals. They talk about localism, but they're just wanting, they'll get in the $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 jobs, and they walk around like kings and piss on the head of the lower ranking people. I know union guys that are well trained, well skilled, everything, and up there, and they're having to get food given to them by their families to help feed their families. And yet, the union guys make big bucks, baby. So, it's a lot to be said about this whole process. It's getting to be to a point where it's dehumanizing. The entire process. Unions that used to stand for something now stand and wait their order from the big money boys. The government used to stand for something, the Democratic Party, they now wait to take their orders from the big boys. They get their pockets lined. The union guys get their monies. But guess what? And it's a reality. If you want specifics, I'll give you specifics. I, it's shameful, the number of calls that I get. Can you help me with this? Do you know a lawyer you can send me to? I have to hire my own lawyer to go and fight a case at work because my union steward won't call me back or my union won't file a grievance. And these are just the basic processes. They don't even give them a reason why they don't file it. They just don't file it. And then when you go out to dinner and you see there's Randy Pereira sitting with Tim Johns and you know something's going on, right? And you see all of this going on and you think, wow, they get paid a pretty penny. Well, that's funny. Ain't got time to meet with a union member. But then when Kimberly Pine runs for office, oh, we're endorsing her. Even though she does nothing for us, for the people in general, we're going to support her because they get to keep their money in their pockets and make more money, rip off the employees of the unions, don't represent them, get in bed with the managers of companies and state agencies, do nothing for them. Isn't that beautiful? But anyway, enough of that for right now. Well, I want to, there's a couple things that, regarding that sludge up at, from Hawaii Kai to Waianae, real quickly, there's going to be a meeting on the 18th at Waianae, and the neighborhood board is a special meeting. I was going to go there and prepare, give a talk on what I know about this mess. But I want to share something with you real quick. You know, I reported to you that the Department of Army has a permit, and I gave you the permit number, POH20100280. And in that, in my presentation of what I offered was that the disposal sites, they being the Army Corps of Engineers, designated a disposal site. And there was Rim Island 1, Yacht Club, Port Lock, Mauna Loa Bay, South Oahu Ocean Dredge. They were going to dump it in the ocean. This is what this permit issued by the, and it was signed, and keep this date in mind, signed by Robert Clark and the engineer Asbury, Thomas D. Asbury, on February 21st, 2013, for Mr. Asbury of the U.S. Army. And this is a permit identifying these locations that they can dump in the ocean. And Richard Clark, the representative for the Hawaii Kai Marina. So this is what I, February 2013. Now, recently I come across a document where on August 23rd, 2012, there was a letter transmitted. And keep that date in mind, August 23rd, 2012. That document, this document, identifies where they were going to dump it. You heard me tell you about PVT landfill. As AMC, American Marine Corps, already has committed commitment from a permitted disposal facility in Leeward, Oahu, AMC plans to haul all dredge materials to the PVT landfill in Nanakuli. Right? Now, this is in this is their dredge plan that they submitted. And again, this was August 23rd, 2012. So if it was going to PVT in 2012, why would the Army Corps of Engineers sign a permit identifying the ocean in 2013? That's one of them. There will be no ocean disposal in this plan. This is what they're saying in 2012. But the Army Corps, and I hope they bother to explain, because if I'm wrong in reading this, then maybe I'd need to go back to school and read. But it says specifically where they can dump it in the ocean, longitude, latitude. And it was dated again in February of 2013. Yet they have in their hands a dredge material disposal plan. There will be no ocean disposal. This is what AMC says associated with this project. All materials will be offloaded and disposed of at approved upland disposal site. All dredge materials will be brought to the PVT landfill for final disposal. PVT landfill is one of the two permitted county landfills for municipal waste and has more than enough capacity to hold a maximum contract dredge amount of 128,800 cubic yards. They go on further. Pine Ridge Farms, which is a trucking company, has offered its trucking and disposal service to AMC for the course of this project. They have the ability to keep pace with our dredging and dewatering operations by providing several trucks each day. They have proposed taking the dredged materials to PVT landfill in Nanakuli, where it will be taken and used as capping material. PVT has the proper disposal permits required to accept the maximum amount dredged material from this project, and they included a copy of PVT's permit. PVT requires that only this material be delivered to their landfill in Nanakuli. Nowhere in this plan does it say Sir Trucking. But the puzzle is, why would they, this permit that I have in hand that I've been citing from, identifies ocean dumping in February of this year, but yet the disposal plan was written in August 23rd, they say, of 2012, and it's saying they're going to dump it at PVT. There's a disconnect here. Remember, thumb up nose, thumb up butt, or whatever. I think the Army Corps of Engineers is just as guilty of something, but they're not talking. You have to write them and ask them, and so we'll try to report it as we get it. But again, something's wrong here, folks. Something's terribly wrong, and we'll see if we can get it and change it. But again, thank you for listening today, and we'll get back with you on this sludge. And if you are going to, you're interested in coming out and joining there in Waianae, the neighborhood board meeting on Wednesday at 7:30, and I'm trying now to find out the exact location. Wednesday, I will not be able to. This is anyway. I'll post it up at carolcox.com, and remember, you can get all of this at carolcox.com, carolcox.com, and I'm going to try next week to talk about ocean issues, and I have a gentleman that I'm trying to coordinate with. He's on travel, but he did send me the book, and we're going to be talking about that either this week coming or next week. And we'll bring you more information on the sludge, and we're looking at the molasses from a different angle and trying to figure out what are some of the solutions that we can suggest. Unfortunately, the gentleman didn't call in that was going to call in, but we'll talk to you next week. Aloha.
Listening to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, 1080 on the AM dial.